Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the County Chronicle, the December 31st edition. We'll start with the first page stories. Arthur Village Board. Chief presents proposals for flock safety cameras by Arianna Cherry. Village Comptroller Erica Carter reported that fraudulent activity was recently discovered in one of the village's account at the most recent meeting of the Arthur Village Board. While the issue has been corrected, Carter explained that the effects will continue into December's finance reporting. The fraud is fixed, but it carries over into December, Carter said, noting the village will not be able to fully balance its books until the current billing cycle closes. Carter added that Arthur was not the only municipality impacted, as one of the village's check was intercepted as part of a larger scheme. To prevent further incidents, the board discussed adopting a positive pay system recommended by the village bank. The system would require the village to pre-authorize all checks electronically before payment is issued. Trustees discussed liability concerns, noting that without the added safeguards, the village could be responsible for fraudulent checks that cleared. Along with the discussion about fraud, Carter also reported that QuickBooks will begin charging $2.50 per employee each month, creating an additional village administrative cost. Police Chief Elliot Tinnen presented a proposal to install flock safety cameras at the two main entry points into the village. The cameras function as license plate readers and are already used by the county to assist with investigations and locating missing people. It's not Big Brother, Tinnen told the board, emphasizing that the cameras only capture images of the rear vehicles and does not track speed. He shared an example of a missing dementia patient recently located in Indianapolis with help from the system. Tinnen explained that the cameras cost $3,000 per unit annually, but said a recurring grant through the Attorney General's office covers the full expense. Tinnen will be looking into the grant further for information about covering the costs of the camera. Other items discussed and voted upon. Public Works Director Grant Corum updated the board on continued problems with the village MEOX chlorine generation system, which was installed in 2020 at a cost of approximately $40,000. While the system has improved water quality and helped clean older water lines, Corum said repeated mechanical failures and high repair costs have undermined its long-term savings. He also expressed frustration that a key system component was not covered under what he believed to be a five-year warranty. I hate to keep throwing money at it, Corum said. Every time I spend money, the plan to save money over time gets pushed further back. The board discussed whether to continue repairing the system or return to traditional bulk chlorine. Trustees reviewed a $10,900 proposal from Leave It to Us Total Tree Care Plus LLC to remove 10 dead or dying trees and 3 stumps, including trees located at 407 Willow Street. A new generator has been installed at Wells Transmission and work on well number 9 is scheduled to begin this week. The board addressed a long-standing complaint involving an inoperable truck parked in the village right-of-way near the grade school. Corum confirmed that a notice has been sent and the vehicle will be towed once weather conditions allow. The next article, deputies find man they're searching for dead near Camargo. His wife was found dead in Garrett fire last month, by David Porter. Derek Chandler, 42, of Villa Grove, was found dead December 22nd along the railroad tracks at Camargo, according to Douglas County Sheriff's Office. Coroner Lisa Edwards said the initial cause of death is exposure, pending toxicology reports. She added there was no external trauma to the body. Chandler's wife, Jennifer Chandler, 42, was found dead November 6th in Garrett following a house fire. Edwards previously stated there was evidence of smoke inhalation in that case, indicating the fire as the cause of death, but said other factors were being investigated. She said last week that both cases remain under investigation. Sheriff Nathan Chaplin said he's not aware whether Derek Chandler was suspected in the death of his wife or the fire in Garrett. Derek Chandler was facing felony burglary charges and was due in court January 9, 2026. A warrant had been issued December 5th, and he reportedly was picked up on December 8th and released on his own recognizance. Sheriff Chaplin explained that deputies were searching for Chandler as a person of interest in yet another theft when they found his body. They were doing extra patrols in the Camargo area due to recent break-ins, Chaplin said, and decided to search along the railroad tracks where Chandler was known to go. I didn't think we'd find him that way, Chaplin said, of Chandler's death. Chandler had a long history of criminal convictions, mostly for burglary, dating back to 2003. Court records show that he was sentenced in 2003 to 6 years in state prison. He was sentenced again in 2012 to 1 year in prison for aggravated DUI. A charge of driving while his license was revoked was dropped as part of that plea deal. He was arrested again in 2012 and pleaded guilty to possession of a stolen vehicle and was sentenced to 20 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. By 2023, Chandler was out of prison but back in court on new charges of residential burglary and criminal damage to property. He pleaded guilty to an amended charge and the burglary charge was dropped. He was sentenced to 3 years in the Department of Corrections and reportedly released on March 8, 2025. Chandler was again facing new charges of burglary and criminal damage to property since his release earlier this year. Court records show that Chandler was assessed more than $15,000 in fine and fees over the past 22 years and still owed more than $12,600. We'll move now to the obituaries. Alan D. Ferguson, 61, of Humboldt, passed away at 8:48 a.m. on Monday, December 22, 2025, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, January 2, 2026, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main in Arcola. Masonic rites conducted by the Arcola Masonic Lodge, 336 AF and AM, will be held at 5:45 p.m. prior to the visitation on Friday. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, January 3, 2026, at the Edwards Funeral Home. Burial with military rites conducted by the Arcola Honor Guard will be held in the Arcola Cemetery. Ruby Burkholder, 72, of Arthur, passed away peacefully in her sleep early Wednesday morning, December 24, 2025, at her residence. Funeral services were held Monday morning, December 29th, at the HCK West Building in rural Arthur. Bishop David E. Schrock officiated. Burial was in the Auto Cemetery. Visitation was Sunday, December 28th, at the HCK West Building. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Larry Franklin Belton, 75, of Arthur, passed away at 3:18 a.m. on Sunday, December 21st, 2025, at his residence. Visitation was held Friday, December 26th, at the Vineyard Church, Sullivan. Funeral services were held Saturday, December 27th, at the church. Pastor Jim Plank officiated. Burial with military rites conducted by the Arthur American Legion Post 749 followed in the Arthur Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. The next article, new laws. Illinois expands job protected leave for parents with newborns in NICU. Laws also address AI in hiring, workplace transparency, organ donation, leave, and more. By Brendan Moore. Illinois workers with a newborn in a neonatal intensive care unit will soon have additional access to job protected unpaid leave. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed House Bill 2978, dubbed the Family Neonatal Intensive Care Leave Act, earlier this year, and it takes effect January 1st. It requires employers of between 16 and 50 workers to provide up to 10 days of unpaid leave to employees who have a child in the NICU. Larger employers must provide up to 20 days. The law applies to both part and full-time workers. It covers a broader swath of workers under the Federal Family with Medical Leave Act, the law requiring public agencies, K-12 schools, and private companies with at least 50 employees to provide up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave per year. Workers are eligible for FMLA must exhaust that leave before utilizing the NICU leave. Employees covered under the law must maintain their employees' health insurance benefits and guarantee their reinstatement upon the conclusion of leave. Employers can't force workers to exhaust their paid leave instead of unpaid NICU leave, though employers can take it if they choose. Violations may result in fines up to $5,000. Here are some other new labor laws that take effect in 2026. AI and employment decisions. An amendment to the Illinois Human Rights Act, House Bill 73773, prohibits the use of AI in employment decisions such as recruitment, hiring, and promotion if that use results in discrimination due to race, religion, sex, and age. The law, which goes into effect January 1st, would require employees to disclose use of AI in employment decisions. The measure, however, could potentially run afoul of recent order that limits how states can regulate AI. Documenting domestic violence. House Bill 1278 prevents employers from disciplining employees for using work devices to document domestic violence, sexual violence, gender violence, or any other forms of violence against them or a family member. Employers also have to grant employees access to such documentation and communication stored on the devices. The law is inspired by a New York woman who used her work device to document domestic abuse committed by her husband. She was disciplined by her employer and later murdered by her husband. Workplace transparency. House Bill 3638 amends the Illinois Workplace Transparency Act to broaden the definition of unlawful employment practice to include any act prohibited by the Illinois Human Rights Act, the Federal Civil Rights Act, or any other state or federal law covering employment issues. Employment contracts can also no longer include terms that limited employees' ability to engage in concerted activities like collective bargaining. And it prohibits contact stipulations that shorten the statute of limitation for employee claims, apply the law of another state to claims, or require claims be resolved outside of Illinois. Paid leave for organ donors. House Bill 1616 extends paid leave requirements for organ donors to part-time employees. Under the law, workers can use up to 10 days leave per year to serve as an organ donor. Part-time workers' pay for those days will be their average daily pay rate over the previous 2 months. Military honors. Under Senate Bill 220, employees with more than 50 employed workers must offer up to 8 hours of paid leave per month, capped at 40 hours per calendar year, for employees to participate in a military funeral honors detail. It is addition to regular paid time off. Unemployment benefits. House Bill 3200 allows for someone who voluntarily leaves their job for mental health reasons to be eligible for unemployment benefits. It is a 3-year pilot program that sunsets December 24, 2028. The next article, Regulators Strike Millions from Ameren ComEd Rate Hike Requests, by Maggie Doherty. The Illinois Commerce Commission approved lower than requested rate increases for the state's major electric utilities in separate decisions Thursday after they spent beyond their 2024 budgets. Under the state's Public Utilities Act, utility companies are allowed to petition the ICC to recover capital expenses incurred above their projected budgets. The ICC ruled that the full amounts requested, $268.5 million for ComEd and $59.6 million for Ameren Illinois, were not proven by the utilities to be reasonable and prudent. The ICC shaved off $25.4 million from ComEd's request and $11.2 million from Ameren's. Ameren's request was expected to increase rates by 0.39 cents per month for typical residential customers in central and southern Illinois, if approved in full. With the reduced amounts approved, the company expects current electrical delivery rates to remain relatively unchanged. In both cases, the new rates will go into effect in January. Precise impacts on customer bills will depend on service class and energy usage levels. Accountability. The ICC chairman, Doug Scott, said in a statement that the decision was intended to hold the utilities accountable for their performance. The ICC's decision today reiterates that unsupported departure from Ameren's approved grid plan are inconsistent with the goals of the grid planning process, and it is the utility's responsibility to prove that any adjustments made are reasonable and prudent for maintaining our power system, Scott said. He released a parallel statement regarding Con Ed. Under Illinois' Clean Energy Jobs Act, passed in 2021, the ICC has the power to reject utility rate hikes that they deem cost inefficient. Before the passage of the CEJA, rates were set by a formula, a system that critics had said lacked adequate consumer protections. The commission approved revised grid plans with rate increases for both companies last year. The ICC granted rate increases of $606 million for ComEd and $308 million for Ameren, both to be spread through 2027. The commission also refused to make ratepayers cover more than $10.7 million to reimburse Ameren shareholders for contribution to the company's Employee Retirement Benefits Fund. CUB said that Ameren could not prove its shareholders made those contributions. The ICC, which has found the proposal inconsistent with commission practice and law, at least 3 times prior said its ruling that it found no reason to come to a different conclusion this time around. As part of the decision, both utilities will also be required to submit affordability data and cost-benefit analyses of the related grid plan projects in future reconciliation requests. That rule is intended to help the ICC and other stakeholders analyze the company's performance in meeting its goals. The next article, Justice Department sues for access to Illinois voter rolls, Illinois among at least 19 states being sued for voter data, by Peter Hancock. The U.S. Department of Justice filed suit Thursday against the state of Illinois seeking access to its complete, unredacted voter registration database, including sensitive personal data such as dates of birth, driver's license numbers, and partial Social Security numbers. The lawsuit, which was filed in U.S. District Court in Springfield, makes Illinois at least the 19th state to be sued for such information. Read the lawsuit. The Justice Department has been seeking information since July, but the Illinois State Board of Elections so far has declined to hand over the information, citing both state and federal privacy laws that it says prohibit it from handing over such information. Instead, in August, the agency gave DOJ a copy of some database that it makes available under state law to political parties and candidates. That file includes voters' names, addresses, and their age at the time they registered, but not their date of birth, driver's license, state ID, or Social Security number. Federal officials have said they want the information to determine whether Illinois is complying with federal requirements to keep its voter database updated and accurate, which includes scrubbing registration of voters who have died or moved away from their listed addresses. State officials, however, responded that Illinois has a decentralized voter registration system in which each local election authority at the city and county level are responsible for maintaining their own voter databases. The lawsuit names State Board of Electors Executive Director Bernadette Matthews as the defendant. A spokesman for the board said it asked Attorney General Kwame Raoul's office for representation in the case. The agency declined to offer any further comment. The next article, new laws, Illinois grocery tax to end, aquifer protection begins, bills regulating reservation appointments, single-use plastics to take effect January 1st, by Ben Zielinski and Brendan Moore. Illinois statewide 1% grocery tax will go away on January 1st, though many people will continue to pay at the local level. Data compiled by the Illinois Municipal League shows that 656 municipalities, a little more than half of the state's municipalities, have passed an ordinance establishing their own grocery tax. Those communities are home to 7.2 million people, or 56.5% of the state's population. Three counties, Washington, Wabash, and Moultrie, have also approved the countywide grocery taxes. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a bill in 2024 eliminating the 1% statewide grocery tax, which he touted as a measure to ease residents' tax burden. But because the revenue from the state grocery tax went to municipal governments rather than state coffers, the measure allowed local governments to levy their own 1% tax via ordinance rather than a referendum to voters. Here are some other laws that will take effect in the new year. Hotel soaps are phased out. The phase-out of small, single-use plastic bottles in Illinois hotel room continues. Senate Bill 2960 passed and signed into law in 2024, bars hotels from providing toiletries such as shampoo, conditioner, and bath soap in less than 6-ounce plastic containers unless specifically requested by the hotel guest. The ban took effect in hotels with 50 or more rooms on July 1st and takes effect for all hotels starting in 2026. Hotels in violation will receive a written warning for the first offense and be subject to fines of up to $1,500 for each subsequent violation. The legislation is intended to spur the state's hospitality industry to reduce its plastic footprint by shifting to either refillable toiletry containers or larger plastic bottles. Similar laws have been enacted in states like California, New York, and Washington. Squatter removal. Senate Bill 1563 will make it easier for authorities to remove squatters who are illegally staying at someone else's residence. The law clarifies that a court-ordered eviction is not required for police to remove squatters from a person's home, and police can enforce criminal trespassing charges against a squatter. Pritzker signed the bill in July after squatters moved into a home next door to Representative Marcus Evans in Chicago. According to ABC 7, Chicago police told homeowners they couldn't remove the squatters from the home, and the homeowner would have to go through the eviction process in Cook County Court, which can take months. Drinking water protection. Senate Bill 1723 bans carbon sequestration, the process of capturing and storing carbon by injecting it underground within an area that overlies, underlies, or passes through U.S. Environmental Protection Agency designated sole source aquifer. The new law applies to the footprint of the Muhammad Aquifer, which is the main source of drinking water for more than 500,000 people across a 15-count area in central Illinois. It comes as Illinois, especially downstate, is targeted for carbon sequestration projects due to the state's favorable geology and availability of federal tax credits. Studies, including those conducted by researchers at the University of Illinois, have found minimal risk to water sources from sequestration activity, but the legislation was a priority for central Illinois community activists, environmental advocates, and a bipartisan cadre of local lawmakers with zero risk tolerance due to the lack of clear alternative water source if the aquifer were tainted. Safety gear for firefighters. Illinois will take first steps towards requiring safer gear for firefighters. Under House Bill 2409, manufacturers of firefighter turnout gear starting in 2026 must provide written notice if their products contain PFAS, known as forever chemicals. Numerous scientific studies have indicated exposure to PFAS to increase risk of developing a variety of forms of cancer. Manufacturers will be banned from selling turnout gear and personal protective equipment containing PFAS altogether starting January 1st, 2027. Lift assist fees. House Bill 2336 allows municipalities or fire districts to charge assisted living facilities or nursing home for calls to their fire departments requesting help lifting a resident when it is not an emergency. The bill was an initiative by the Illinois Municipal League, which argued that calls to fire departments for the non-emergency service are a burden on local governments and shift liabilities for injuries that happen during the process to fire departments rather than the facility. Stadium funding. Senate Bill 2772 adds women's professional sports to the types of facilities the University Sports Facilities Authority can oversee. Currently, law only allows the ISFA to oversee sport facilities for baseball, football, and auto racing. The bill is not designed to move any team stadium proposals forward, though the Chicago Star women's soccer team has previously been reported to be interested in building a new stadium with the help from state funding. The bill was the only one related to sports stadium funding that advanced in Springfield in 2025. The Chicago Bears committed earlier this year to building a stadium in Arlington Heights, but are still waiting for approval from the village and struggling to find support in Springfield for funding. Public official privacy. House Bill 576 allows state lawmakers, constitutional officers, and state attorneys, among others, to request their personal information be redacted on public websites. Public officials will be able to use their campaign funds to pay for personal security services and security upgrades to their home, including security systems, cameras, walls, fences, and other physical improvements. Rewilding. House Bill 2726 allows the Illinois Department of Natural Resources to implement rewilding as a conservation strategy for the state. This could entail the restoration of land to its original natural state and the reintroduction of native species, especially apex predators and keystone species such as bison and beavers. Illinois is believed to be the first state to codify this strategy into law. Reservations app regulations. State lawmakers voted this year to crack down on third-party restaurant reservation apps. House Bill 2456 prohibits third-party reservation services from selling reservations without a restaurant's permission. Restaurants are still allowed to partner with the services. Paid time off to pump breast milk. Senate Bill 212 mandates employees to compensate mothers who take breaks in work to pump breast milk for up to a year after their child is born. The bill prohibits employers from requiring employees to use paid leave time for pumping. Naloxone in libraries. House Bill 1910 requires that libraries maintain a supply of opioid overdose medication like naloxone. This drug is often administered through a nasal spray like Narcan. The law also requires that at least one staff member be trained to identify overdoses and administering the drug. Police training on sexual assault. Senate Bill 1195, also known as Anna's Law, requires police officers in training to participate in trauma-informed programs, procedures and practices that are designed to reduce trauma for victims. The bill is named after Anna Williams, a suburban resident who brought the initiative to lawmakers following her own experience with a sexual assault investigation. The bill takes effect in January. Predatory towing. The Senate Bill 2040 gives the Illinois Commerce Commission new powers to punish predatory towing companies, which sometimes tow cars under false pretenses only to charge drivers afterwards. The ICC back law allows the agency to revoke towing licenses, impound tow trucks, and more. The next article, Supreme Court rebuffs Trump's planned National Guard deployment to Chicago, by Brendan Moore and Hannah Meisel. The U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday kept in place a lower court's ruling temporarily barring President Donald Trump from deploying the National Guard troops to Chicago as part of the administration's crackdown on illegal immigration. The 6-3 ruling, which comes more than 2 months after the Trump administration made an emergency appeal to the high court, effectively prevents the federal government from using federalized troops in Chicago while the underlying court case challenging the deployment continues. At this preliminary stage, the government has failed to identify the source of authority that would allow the military to execute the laws in Illinois, the court wrote in an unsigned opinion denying the request for a stay. Conservative Justice Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Clarence Thomas dissented. The Trump administration lawyers had argued that the judicial branch had no right to second-guess a president's judgment on national security matters or resulting military actions. The ruling presents a major setback for the Trump administration and a triumph for Governor J.B. Pritzker and state Democratic leaders who fiercely opposed and pushed back on the concept and practice of federal troops patrolling American cities. Pritzker called the ruling a big win for Illinois and American democracy. This is an important step in curbing the Trump administration's consistent abuse of power and slowing Trump's march toward authoritarianism, the governor said in a statement. American cities, suburbs, and communities should not have to face mass federal agents asking for their papers, judging them for how they look or sound, and living in fear that the president can deploy the military to their streets. Attorney General Kwame Raoul, whose office presented the state's case, was also pleased with the court's ruling. Nearly 250 years ago, the framers of our Constitution carefully divided responsibility over the nation's militia. Today, the U.S. National Guard, between federal, government and the states, believing it impossible that the president should use the state's militia against another state, Raoul said. The extremely limited circumstances under which the federal government can call up the militia over a state's objection do not exist in Illinois, and I am pleased that the streets of Illinois remain free of armed National Guard members as our litigation continues in the courts. In early October, Trump ordered federalization of 300 Illinois National Guardsmen over Pritzker's objections and deployed 200 members of the Texas National Guard to Chicago. The order came as tensions flared outside the U.S. Customs and Immigration Enforcement Processing Facility in Chicago's near west suburb of Broadview, which had become the epicenter of protests against the Trump administration's Chicago-focused Operation Midway Blitz immigration enforcement campaign launched in September. The administration claimed activists were violent and National Guard was needed to protect federal agents and the ICE facility. Trump's deployment of troops to Los Angeles this summer marked the first time in 60 years that a president had taken control of a state's National Guard without a government's consent. He also authorized troop deployments in Washington, D.C. and Portland, Oregon. All had been met with legal challenges, but the attempted deployment to Chicago was the first to reach the nation's high court. Operation Midway Blitz, heavy immigration enforcement presence in Chicago and its suburb continued through mid-November when U.S. Customs and Border Patrol Commander Gregory Bovino and his 200 agents abruptly left the area. During the more than 2 months of aggressive enforcement actions, agents arrested more than 3,000 people in the U.S. without legal authorization. National Guard troops were only active for a day at the Broadview ICE facility before U.S. District Judge April Perry issued a temporary restraining order blocking their deployment. While Texas Guardsmen were sent back to their state at the same time, Border Patrol agents left Chicago last month, and 300 members of the Illinois National Guard have remained under the Trump administration's authority. Federal officials have said both Illinois and Texas Guardsmen spent their time doing training exercises. After their deployment, clashes between the federal agents and civilians shifted from Broadview to Chicago neighborhoods, where agents, including Bovino, often used force like tear gas and other riot control weapons like tear gas and pepper balls to disperse crowds. As this confrontation shifted, so did the arguments from Trump administration lawyers who said the militarized manpower was necessary to protect federal agents and property from, quote, rioters that they alleged were aimed fireworks at agents and have thrown bottles, rocks, and tear gas at them. In a separate lawsuit, protesters, clergy, and journalists won a preliminary injunction last month restricting agents from using riot control weapons, but after an initial ruling in the case, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals cast doubt on the judge's legal authority to limit how immigration agents do their job. The plaintiff asked the case be dropped. Perry's October 9th ruling, in which she found no credible evidence that there's a danger of rebellion in the state of Illinois, was later backed up by a three-judge panel on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which wrote that political opposition is not rebellion. Raoul argued that the troop deployment violates Illinois' right as a sovereign state to carry about its own law enforcement, as well as a 1878 Posse Comitatus Act that bans the military from participating in domestic law enforcement. National Guard members are often federalized for overseas missions. At the state level, they are often deployed by governors to respond to natural disasters and civil unrest. Prior to this year, the last time a president federalized the state's National Guard without a request from a state governor was in 1965, when President Lyndon B. Johnson sent federal troops to protect civil rights protesters in Alabama without the cooperation of segregationist Governor George Wallace. And there's the article continuing my tradition of not making any resolutions by the rambling man David Porter. Throughout the years, I've used my New Year's column to mock the tradition of resolutions, making silly predictions and poke fun at the retiring year. This year, I want to do something different, but I won't. Well, maybe I will. I don't know yet. That's how this gig works. We can find out together. I can predict that the Epstein files will continue to dominate the news. That's a given. We want the truth, don't we? Not really. What we want is dirt on the other team. We want vindication for our team and damnation for the other side. The whole truth and nothing but the truth? It sounds good, but it's never going to happen. President Trump has said the Epstein files are a distraction. On that, I agree, but perhaps not in the same way. I think he relishes the distraction and contributes to it. While he pushes a narrative that it distracts from all the great and wonderful things he's doing, it also distracts from an honest deep dive into those facades. Like thousands of layoffs across the country, grocery store prices that continue to rise overall, questionable military strikes, the effect of tariffs on farmers and others. But let's talk about the Epstein files some more. Congress has said release the files. The president signed the bill, yet we're still not getting a lot of it. The distraction is prolonged. Do you think that's an accident? And that is all the time we have for this week. This is Chris Yerkes. Say goodbye and Happy New Year.